year or older. We found, however, that the board has not systematically analyzed whether producers are complying with this requirement. We analyzed board data and found that many deer and elk producers are not submitting all of the samples required by law. We estimate that about two-thirds of the producers in years 2014 through 2017 were fully compliant. They submitted all of the samples required for all of the animals that they reported dead. These peach-colored bars show that between 15 and 24% of producers submitted some samples, but not samples for every animal they reported dead. This could represent a single lapse by a producer with an otherwise great record, or it could be a producer that has a more systematic compliance problem. Our biggest concern, though, is with the producers that fall into this dark orange bars. Those are the 12 to 16% of producers are the ones that did not submit any chronic wasting disease testing samples for a year where they did have a dead deer or elk. So these producers, their herds went unmonitored during that time. The analysis we performed had its limitations. The big problem is that the board's chronic wasting disease testing data did not include animal identification numbers, so we could not do a one-to-one match between the testing data and the dead animals. So these numbers that I present are estimates, but they do give you the idea that certainly some producers are missing some of their tests. The board does have paper records that have those identification numbers attached to the testing results, and the board has done deep dives into producer records when they have reason to believe there's a problem. But they have not systematically analyzed every producer to determine their CWD testing compliance. We believe that the board needs to design a way to systematically analyze chronic wasting disease testing data and flag those animals that are not being tested, and therefore flagging those producers that are not complying with the law. We've been told that the board is working on designing such a report, and that as of last July, they are putting animal identification numbers into the database with their chronic wasting disease test results. So they should be able to automate this analysis and do a more thorough and more, less estimated analysis than I did. They should be able to do this going forward. Once the board has this analysis up and running, the board staff should use this data to identify producers that are not complying with the law and to penalize them appropriately. Shifting gears, I want to talk a little bit about the relationship between the Board of Animal Health and the Department of Natural Resources. Responsibility for deer and elk in Minnesota is divided at the fence. So the Board of Animal Health oversees the farmed deer and elk, and DNR manages the wild deer herd. The two agencies must coordinate, however, to respond to chronic wasting disease. Wild and farmed deer and elk can come in contact, whether through a fence or because a farmed deer escapes its enclosure. Therefore, anytime chronic wasting disease is found, it's important that both agencies take steps to prevent it from spreading any further. We and others have noticed, however, that the board and the Department of Natural Resources have a fairly tense relationship. We're concerned that poor communication between the two could impact their abilities to respond when chronic wasting disease is discovered in Minnesota. In particular, both agencies have complaints about data sharing between the two. The board and DNR must share data so that both agencies can appropriately respond when chronic wasting disease is found. At a minimum, both agencies need the precise location where the infected animal was found. DNR has complained that the Board of Animal Health has taken too long to fulfill data requests related to deer and elk farms. The board alleges that DNR has failed to protect producer identities, which are classified as not public under Minnesota law. We recommend that the Board of Animal Health and the Department of Natural Resources enter into a memorandum of understanding to improve data sharing between the two. The agencies have already begun working on this recommendation. On April 10th, 2018, they put in place a data sharing agreement that outlined how not public data should be protected. And we think this is a good first step, but we do encourage the agencies to continue working together to establish expectations for deer and elk data in particular. When chronic wasting disease is found, what information should be shared and how quickly? I will now move on to discuss our recommendations to the legislature. The first has to do with the composition of the Board of Animal Health. As I mentioned previously, the board has 5 members. This, however, is smaller than the similar boards in other states. There are 5 other states that have that give farm, deer, or elk oversight to an entity similar to the Minnesota's Board of Animal Health. And you can see these 5 states on page 13 of the report. There's a table showing the states and their member compositions, Exhibit 2.1. As you'll see there, the boards range in size from 7 to 16 members. We also analyzed all Minnesota boards that have licensing, permitting, or registration responsibilities and found that most of those have at least 7 members as well. Further, we found that the Board of Animal Health is unusual for a Minnesota board in that it does not have a seat for a member of the general public. We recommend that the legislature consider expanding the Board of Animal Health and adding a public member. We think that 7 members would be appropriate given the compositions of the animal health boards in other states and other Minnesota boards. If the legislature is looking for guidance in how to add members, the Exhibit 2.1 shows what some other states have done. Other states include members such as representatives from related industries like meatpacking. Some have positions for specific academic heads and or commissioners from other agencies, for example. I would now like to tell you a little bit about our comparison of Minnesota's farmed deer and elk regulations with those from other states. We did our analysis using a very helpful survey conducted by the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, and we found that in some areas, such as baiting, whole carcass importation, and chronic waste disease testing, Minnesota's policies are among the most rigorous in the nation. In other areas, however, Minnesota's approach is less rigorous. In the areas of deer and elk feeding and the importation of live animals, Minnesota laws do less to protect Minnesota's deer and elk than the policies put in place by some other states. And I'll tell you just a little bit about those 2 areas now. Feeding deer and elk and other similar species encourages them to congregate artificially, which can increase the possibility of disease transmission. The Department of Natural Resources has jurisdiction over deer feeding, and they have the ability to restrict deer feeding in an area to control disease. As such, Minnesota has banned deer feeding in chronic waste disease management zones, which encompass all or part of 16 Minnesota counties. About a third of states have a similar policy. They ban deer feeding in parts of the state. 18% of states, however, ban deer feeding statewide. Importing animals from other states is another way that CWD might spread. As we mentioned earlier, animals with chronic waste and disease do not necessarily show clinical signs. So anytime you're bringing a new animal to the farm, there's no guarantee that that animal is actually healthy. The Board of Animal Health regulates imports of live deer and elk, and they issue permits for animals to enter from other states. The board does not allow imports from CWD-positive farms, or from animals in from farms in counties where CWD has been found in the wild. Almost a quarter of states have similar policies to Minnesota. They restrict imports from certain areas of other states. But half of the states have more rigorous policies than we do. 10% of states will not allow any importation from entire states if the state has been found to have a case of chronic wasting disease. And 40% of states do not allow any live deer or elk importation. Given that Minnesota's policies with respect to deer and elk feeding and live animal importation are less rigorous than those of some other states, we think the areas merit further consideration from the legislature. We think that the legislature should establish an advisory task force of diverse perspectives to explore these issues and recommend policy changes if they find them appropriate. That concludes my presentation for today. With that, I'd be happy to answer questions from the committee. Thank you,
Ms. Villacueva. And we have questions from the the audience. Representative Becker Finn, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have several questions, Ms. Villacueva. You mentioned that things had improved over the last year. Could you talk a little bit about when the audit was announced and when you started your work? Because I know my kids tend to follow the rules better when they know they're being watched. So I'm wondering if you can speak a little bit to that.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Becker-Finn. The audit was selected last April 2017, and we began our work on the audit in October. The Board of Animal Health has had some recent changes in leadership. The executive director is fairly new, within a year and a half or so, I think, and the assistant director in charge of the Deer and Elk program took over those responsibilities in June of last year. And I have heard from numerous sources that the new assistant director in charge of the Deer and Elk program has really taken a fine-tooth comb to the program to put in place a lot of practices that are more strenuous than the ones they had before.
Representative, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then as far as testing, so looking at your chart on, it's page 10, or slide 10, we know that one out of three producers are not compliant, but my concern here is that the prevalence then here of where the non-compliance is just the floor, because you don't know what you don't know. So, you know, there's not like we don't have a color or a different part of the chart that tells us about dead animals not reported. Because we've got submitted all required samples, submitted some but not all required samples, and dead animals reported but no samples submitted. So really concerned here about the dead animals that are not reported, and that kind of gets back to something you mentioned with the inventory and the accuracy, or I guess inaccuracy, of those numbers. So just to clarify what you said earlier, the way that things are currently being enforced and the way the current it's currently working is that a producer could use its number from the year before and just add or subtract based on what they know. And that could have been based on the year before that and the year before that and the year before that and the year before that. So how accurate is this 9,300 estimate?
Ms. De La Cueva.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Becker-Finn. Yes, that is our concern with the inventories, that if they are building every New Year's inventory on the last year's without ever reading those tags, then yes, how do they know which animals are actually on the farm? And it's part of the reason that we make the recommendation. I do know that the board does have the authority to require farms to present their animals to a board representative for tag reading if the board has a reason to do so. And since 2000, the most recent sort of batch of chronic waste disease cases found on farms began in late 2016. I know that the spring of 2017, the board did sort of start to take a harder look at inventories and request that several producers present those animals and reconcile those inventories better. I think that they are definitely emphasizing inventory reconciliation now, and if they can't get a count during an inspection that matches what should be in the database, they're sort of talking through, you know, every animal that's come and entered and left the herd. And to your, you know, a previous point of yours, yes, if a producer doesn't report an animal dead, then they're not showing up in this, they may not show up in this exhibit that I've created. However, hopefully at the next inspection, when they're working through their inventory reconciliation, you know, it will come up that an animal, that the number is off, and oh yeah, that animal actually died and I never reported it. So hopefully it gets reported sometime. If there was a requirement to read tags more frequently, I think we would have a better idea which animals are really on the farms.
One more follow-up, Representative. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hopefully is, I think, not good enough when we're dealing with a crisis and an infectious disease being spread. I know, you know, like when we have measles outbreaks or there are other things, we know where the numbers are and where it's occurring, and that allows us to track things better and hopefully get things under control. And so I have concerns, real concerns about that, and I know you talked about it being quite difficult to ID animals and some of the you know, the things that might be difficult as far as, you know, putting the animals under or whatever it is that you have to do, but I there is technology now where you could use different kinds of tags that could be read without putting the animal under or physically touching the animal or relying on binoculars out in the field. So my final question is, you talked about that we have some of Minnesota's deer and elk policies are rigorous regarding baiting, carcass import, and testing, but rigorous policies that are not enforced are worth nothing. And so having things down on paper is not helpful at all if we're not enforcing things. But I didn't see in your recommendation that we strengthen enforcement. We don't need a task force to tell us we need to strengthen enforcement here. And so I'm wondering if you can speak a little bit about that and whether that, I mean, maybe I missed it. Obviously it's a full report, but that isn't included in your slides. And that would seem like a really obvious thing that we could do right now without kicking the can down the road with the task force.
Ms. De La Cueva.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Becker-Finn. Yes, that was sort of, I believe I said it probably the first thing in the presentation was that our broadest recommendation is that they improve enforcement. And that is on page 33 of the report. We recommend that the board fully enforce Minnesota deer and elk laws, strengthen consequences for those producers who fail to comply, and develop methods of monitoring field staff performance. And I agree entirely. Having a good policy means nothing if we're not enforcing it. I would also like just to mention, with respect to tagging technology, it's a good point. There is technology that allows animal tags to be read at a distance of at least a few feet. And I believe that in their response letter at the back of the report, the board actually mentioned, I think, ultra-high-frequency technology as an option. And it's not something that I spent a lot of time looking at, but perhaps the board could speak more to that when they come up, if you like.
Representative Wagenius, next question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on this line of questioning,
Keep the mic close so we can hear.
I am surprised, given the risk to our wild population, that you aren't saying very explicitly we have to have electronic tagging of high quality.
Is there a question there?
Yeah, I would like a response to that, and I have another question.
Ms. De La Cueva.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius. It's an area that I wasn't able to investigate fully. I'm not sure what other states have done or whether the technology is affordable or in common use for deer and elk at this time. I think it's definitely something that it would be good for the board to investigate and to encourage producers to do, but it was not something that I was able to spend time on for this evaluation.
Representative.
Well, Mr. Chair, then I think that our committees need to look into this, because just thinking about it is not enough, since our wild deer herds are at high risk. And electronics these days, my gosh, think about a Fitbit. I mean, electronics can do a lot to solve this problem. That's one thing. Secondly, when you testified, you said that the persistence of the prions is more than 2 years. Well, we have heard testimony that is more than 5 years, and we really don't know how long it is. So I don't know why you used the 2 year, and I have one follow-up.
Ms. De La Cueva.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius. Yes, I reviewed a lot of scientific literature related to chronic wasting disease. There is evidence that scrapie, which is the equivalent in sheep, has persisted in one study as long as 16 years. In the studies that I looked at, about 2.2 years was the most that was proven. I have heard the number 5 years, but could not find it documented myself. So, which is why I use the 2 year. It definitely will persist in the environment for an alarming amount of time.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, since we don't know, and we're trying to manage a wild deer herd, it seems to me the abundance of caution would be to use the longer length of time, not the shorter. Even you said it's 2.2 has been proven, but I don't think we need to wait for proof. We have to use our common sense and say, look at more of a, I mean, this, you're using like proof beyond a reasonable doubt, and when we should be saying it's more likely than not that these things exist for at least 5 years, which means that our recommendations need to be entirely different if there's a huge difference between 2 years and 5 years. So these recommendations seem extraordinarily weak to me, given the risk to our population, our wild deer population.
Care to comment on that, Ms. Nikoy?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bouguinis, for the comment. Yes, I just used the two-year example in my presentation to give a an example of the fact that they are persistent. The federal requirements for chronic wasting disease programs is based on a 5 years, which, as I said, I could not find scientific evidence for, but the federal government is trying to use a little bit more caution when explaining how long a herd must be quarantined if CWD is found, or how long a or their decontamination process and quarantine for land if chronic wasting disease is found. And so I certainly agree with using an abundance of caution. I was certainly presenting that they does remain in the environment 4 years.
Additional follow-up, Representative.
Well, not an abundance of caution. It's common sense. And let's not use the, you know, proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Let's use the more likely than not standard.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. De La Cueva, I wanted to follow up on kind of the procedures with the audit. And you mentioned that there had been a change in staffing. And it's my understanding that the day that the audit, the program evaluation was selected, that the manager for the program announced his retirement. Did you have the opportunity to interview that individual about procedures and practices that were in place prior to his retirement and prior to the audit being selected?
Ms. De La Cueva?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen. I'm not exactly sure on that timing. I have heard the same, but I did request an interview with the previous director. He declined to talk to me.
Representative Hansen?
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. De La Cueva, you mentioned just now in response to Representative Wagenius's questions about tagging, and it's my understanding that you had a beef farmer that met with either you or the audit staff about explaining how tagging meant, that or how tagging works, how ear tags work, and I think you just said that you didn't have information on that. Did you meet with Jim Votz, and did he describe how ear tagging works in the cattle industry, and is there any reference to that in the report?
Ms. De La Cueva.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen. I did meet with that farmer very early on in my research, and we did discuss how tagging works in the cattle industry. I don't discuss the cattle industry in the report per se, and I wasn't able to sort of do a large, I think anecdotally I've heard, you know, this producer does this and this producer does this. I couldn't do a systematic look at tagging either in Minnesota or what is available to other states. I just didn't feel that I had the information and did not have time to get the information to make a recommendation about that.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. De La Cueva, did you do a Google search at all, or did you contact University of Minnesota about how research is done relating to that?
Ms. De La Cueva.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, yes, sir, I did. I did speak to University of Minnesota Extension Services, who referred me to a couple of different companies that had different types of RFID tagging, and one that is working on GPS tagging, although when I spoke with that company in particular, they said that the GPS technology is too heavy for deer tags, so unless we wanted to collar every deer, that's not technology that this company thought was ready to use widely.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. De La Cueva, I think in my district there are people with cats and dogs that put chips in them in case they get lost.
Yes.
So
yes.
You could put a chip in the cervid, and if it gets out of the fence, then you could find it.
Ms. De La Cueva?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen. I did not research microchipping for this project, although my understanding is that the microchipping helps you identify a cat. If someone can read the chip, it doesn't help you find it from a large distance.
One more follow-up. Hansen.
Thank you. And it appears, you know, that would answer the question of where the deer comes from. If we find a carcass in the wild, we could find out where it comes from.
Comment? De La Cueva?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, that is true. That is a technology they could investigate using more widely.
Representative Lewitt, next question.
Thank you. Two areas. One on the chart here for the sampling versus inventory and deer and elk deaths. Can you go into a little more detail as to was there a reason listed when we know that somebody reported the death and then did not actually submit a sample? Can we get into that a little more as to was there a reason there? A secondary part of that is what's the viability of a sample on a dead carcass? And the reason I say that is if you got 70, 80 stock cows out there and 70, 80 calves on pasture, boy, it is not uncommon to come up missing an animal. And that is with relatively docile animals, but one of the fundamental things that they all do if they get sick is they go hide. And so anyway, can you go into a little more detail on that? Was there any legitimate reasons why samples didn't show up when they did report a death? Or did they just report a missing deer? I don't know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. Yes, there certainly are reasons that a deer legitimately might not be sampled. If a deer does, as you mentioned, hide and die, especially in the summer when it's the hot and they're going to decompose more quickly, the samples, by the time the producer finds them, may not be suitable for testing. At present, the board's data does not sort of systematically reflect that, so I couldn't do an analysis of these were the deer reported dead and these were the deer not tested because of X. It might be something that is worth looking into if the board wanted to, you know, have better information on this. I'm not sure exactly how long it takes for a sample to degrade beyond the usable point. I think that there's also an issue with frozen samples. I think frozen samples can be used, but are harder to use. So there certainly are reasons that someone may submit a sample that is unusable. Samples that were unreadable were included in this. So this does reflect all the samples that were submitted, even if they didn't show a result.
Representative Lewis.
Just a follow-up comment. Maybe I suspect maybe we've got testifiers that'll be coming after you folks to discuss more of the pure science of necropsies and sampling and that type of stuff, because I can say with domestic livestock, it's really frustrating if you lose an animal and you don't discover it very quickly, and even a necropsy becomes you can't determine what the cause of death was, and that's on relatively simple things, not something as subtle as that business of animals hiding. Boy, when they get sick, that's one of the things, the first thing they do. And if you're in a large pasture area, even for great big four-legged cows, that gets to be problematic. And I will say on the little implants that we use on dogs and cats, they certainly, as long as you don't lose the ear, you can track back where the animal came from. But I dealt in a dangerous dog world as a county commissioner, but we couldn't track where the animal was. It's just that typically when an animal was captured, you could read the tag and say, oh, that animal belonged to so-and-so at some point in time. But even that is would likely stay with the animal. Like the other thing that I will say is I typically end up sometimes twice a year going through a cattle herd replacing tags, especially on summer pasture, because they're very difficult to keep in their ears.
I had a question, Zila Cueva. In the statute governing the makeup of the board, the commissioners of Ag, Natural Resources, and Health, and the dean of the College of Veterinary Medicine can serve as consultants. Would you recommend, if the board size be increased, that any of those be made voting members of the board?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We did not recommend explicitly that any of those become voting members. We think it's better for the legislature to decide that. I believe that I want to say that it's maybe Mississippi includes the Commissioner of Agriculture on their board.
I will also point out that to this statute, with that all those commissioners and U of M staff should serve as consultants, I did observe a number of board meetings, and many of those people did present to the board on a regular basis.
Okay. Thank you much. Seeing no further questions from members, and we have less than an hour to go, let's call up next Dr. Beth Thompson, the executive director. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Dr. Beth Thompson from the Board of Animal Health. Good morning, Doctor. Identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Thompson. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Animal Health and also the State Veterinarian. The board appreciates the opportunity of this audit. It was a third-party audit in our eyes, and we also appreciate the results that we've received. The board is dedicated to using this report to guide our continued improvements on this program. Chronic wasting disease is becoming widespread across the country, and the board is determined to do everything in its power to stop its spread. I'd like to go through the recommendations specifically and address each one individually. First of all, recommendation number one, the legislature should consider expanding the size of the Board of Animal Health and adding at least one member of the general public. The board welcomes this proposal to expand its membership and will accept the decisions of the legislature regarding its makeup and size, and will accept the appointment of additional members by the governor's office. Recommendation number two, the Board of Animal Health should update its inventory report to collect statutorily required information regarding the origin of deer and elk that make up the registered herds in the state. The board is already in the process of updating these forms and streamlining these forms also, and is including this recommendation in the updated forms. The board constantly works on educating livestock producers of all species about the necessity and importance of maintaining accurate records. Recommendation number three, the Board of Animal Health should clarify expectations of whether and how often producers must verify their herd inventory on an animal-by-animal basis. And previous testifier referred to pages 23 and 24, where she was actually out on farms where they did this process. The board concurs with this recommendation. We agree to clarify our expectations of cervid producers regarding herd inventories, and we've reassessed the tracking of herd inventories on a year-by-year basis. The board has continually improved data quality, and we now have a fairly new database within our board. The only laws currently dictating the frequency of physical herd inventories are the USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, requirements for herds that are enrolled in the CWD herd certification program. And they must conduct a complete physical inventory no more than 3 years after the last physical inventory. And that USDA requirement are for those herds that move animals interstate. The board will also require a physical animal-by-animal inventory every 3 years for each herd where the official identification in an animal's ear cannot be verified by other means. Recommendation number four, the Board of Animal Health should, number one, track whether producers submit tissue samples from all deceased deer and elk to test for chronic wasting disease, and number two, appropriately penalize those producers who fail to submit samples. As to subpart one of that recommendation, the board does gather data on whether deceased deer and elk are tested for CWD, as producers are required to keep records. CWD, again, can only be, that test is only done on dead animals. The board has initiated data entry starting this state fiscal year that will track CWD testing of individual animals and can be compared to death reports of animals in the herd. The board agrees with this recommendation, and we are creating a tracking report to match deceased animals with the testing submissions. We are also requiring that when an animal dies, the identification in the ear is submitted with the sample to the lab. So now it's a matter of getting the lab and the board that information also talking, so we have a backup. As to subpart two, the board is currently retraining its field staff to use what we call the notice of violation and the Notice of Civil Penalty Enforcement tools more effectively. Recommendation number five, the Board of Animal Health should develop an approval program for deer and elk producers who wish to collect their own chronic wasting disease test samples. The Board agrees with this recommendation, and we already have a good template of this program in use by the Board's poultry program. It is something that can be scaled to match to other livestock species, and the Board will evaluate how to develop it soon. Additionally, the Board is evaluating the steps to initiate an authorized testing agent, that's what it's called in our poultry producers, for other livestock species. Such a program for all species will be helpful when we have foreign animal diseases in the state. The Board has already created a CWD sampling guide to help producers successfully harvest their own CWD samples and submit them to the laboratory for testing. Recommendation number six, the Board of Animal Health should number one, fully enforce Minnesota law, and number two, strengthen consequences for failure to comply. The Board concurs with this recommendation. There is a balance between education and enforcement that needs to be considered. We're veterinarians, we like to educate. However, we are also regulators. The Board program managers are working with field staff regarding proper use of their enforcement powers and the necessity of proper documentation during routine field work. Additionally, the Board is evaluating an increase in penalty amounts dependent on the level of noncompliance. The Board will consider and is already using in some instances other recommended enforcement actions like reduction in CWD for status. The Board has increased electronic documentation in the last 3 years to better track corrective actions that are taken by our field staff. Members, addressing recommendations number 7 and number 8 together, the Board of Animal Health and the Department of Natural Resources should draft a memorandum of understanding outlining each agency's responsibilities with respect to data sharing, and recommendation number 8, the Board of Animal Health staff should take greater care to properly label not public data that they distribute to other agencies, and the Department of Natural Resources should protect the not public data it receives from other agencies. In response to both of those recommendations, first of all, a memorandum of understanding would benefit our agencies as we try to manage the same disease within our unique agency roles. And as mentioned by the previous testifier, we have already put in place a data sharing agreement with the Department of Natural Resources. Lastly, recommendation number 9, the legislature should convene an advisory task force to evaluate the state's regulations related to deer feeding and live cervid imports. The Board would welcome a transparent, legislative-led discussion about deer feeding and live cervid imports. The Board is prepared to support this advisory task force with any information that it might need to make informed decisions. Overall, the Board appreciates the work of the Auditor's Office. This program that we're talking about is highly detailed and involves a high level of regulatory oversight. And it was good to have the Legislative Auditor's Office take a look at this program. And with that, Mr. Chair, are there any questions or comments?
Thank you, Dr. Thompson. Question from Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Dr. Thompson. I think a challenge we always struggle with at the Capitol is, you know, who do we work for? Do we work for the people of Minnesota, or do we work for the industry that we either need to promote or regulate? So if we add one member of the public to the Board of Animal Health, isn't it just rigged? They'll be outvoted. Or if we have a task force that's made up of just the regulated industry, isn't it just rigged? How do we get balance where the people of Minnesota are involved in the decision-making?
Dr. Thompson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, thank you for that question. And that's why I think the Legislative Auditor's Office thought the legislature should be involved in that process of whether we have an additional public member or others added to the board.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Representative Luick brought up an interesting question, and that was sick animals wandering off and dying. Of course, if they die and nobody knows that they're dead, then you've got animals, birds, eating the carcasses, and presumably then spreading the prions. So that seems to be not an excuse, but a call for even a way to figure out, probably through better tagging, electronic tagging, what is happening to that animal who's wandered off and died. What are you planning on doing about that?
Dr. Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, representative members of the committee. It is a difficult situation no matter what species we're talking about. And there are others here that can probably talk more to the size of their facilities, the different geography that is involved. I don't believe there's any technology right now that would allow anyone to determine if an animal wanders off and dies, unfortunately.
Follow-up, Representative.
Well, then, if that is the case, in doing some problem-solving here, you're just accepting that and saying, oh, well, too bad, because... That seems to me to be one of the ways that this disease is likely spreading. I mean, common sense says that's one of the ways it's likely spreading. So you can't just throw up your hands and say, oh, too bad. Now we got to figure out how to solve that problem. If you don't like electronics, give me a different solution, because not doing anything is not a solution.
Dr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, actually, I think I will have our program director, after she introduces herself, direct or answer part of that question.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Mr. Chair and the committee, my name is Dr. Linda Glazer. I'm the program director for the Farm Servid program at the Board of Animal Health since June of 2017. And representative and the committee, I just wanted to address your question. On a herd level, we're monitoring animals every year in each of those herds. So we look at, over time, the animals within the enclosure. All of the animals that die that are over 12 months of age should be tested. 100% testing is perfection. We would like to get there for everyone, but it doesn't happen. So what we have over time is a history of testing animals in that herd for chronic wasting disease. And I think that's really very valuable. You're getting a herd, a picture of the herd over time, but it doesn't, certainly if you miss animals, you have that concern. But if we can test animals, you know, years before that and years after, and test up to, you know, if we can get to 100% of the herd, then we have a picture over time of this very chronic disease.
Follow-up, Representative. And again, be mindful of our time commitment here. Go ahead.
Thank you, but that's not getting at the question. So we have a herd. Let's just narrow this to a herd where we know there has been an animal with chronic wasting disease. What do you do then how do you solve the problem of a sick animal wandering off and dying? And being eaten by whoever,
representative of the committee. Once we know there's a positive animal in the herd, that's a very different story. The herd is quarantined, and with the 8 herds that we've identified in the history of Minnesota, 8 farm servant herds, 7 of those herds, we were able to get funding from the USDA for indemnity and depopulate that herd or put the rest of that herd down. Now, part of the herd plan going toward your timelines was that they have to enter into an agreement with the Board of Animal Health and the U.S. Department of Agriculture to manage that premises where these farm servants were for a minimum of 5 years. In other words, you know, there our rules indicate you cannot put servants back on that premises for 5 years, and you have to decontaminate to the best of our ability with understanding prions last in the environment. So that's, if it's a positive herd, that changes the picture of what's done with that herd. We have negative, you know, if it's not detected testing we're going over time to monitor that herd.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I missed this, but I just wanted to pick up on the question of a animal that runs off. One of the beings that find those animals are farm dogs and other, you know, and I'm just wondering, I've seen our farm dog bring home the head of a deer. I just hope it was one that was shot by a hunter, but maybe not. Maybe it was a sick one. I'm just wondering, what do we know about that kind of transmission, and do veterinarians get any, you know, who are taking care of these domestic animals, get any training, or is there any sort of opportunities for them to look into this issue? What's going on with that?
Ms. Blazer or Dr. Thompson?
Mr. Chair, thank you for that question. Yes, veterinarians go through ongoing training, ongoing continuing education on a yearly. They have to report back to certain agencies with that training. We do have some veterinarians. Actually, we have one on our Farm Servant Task Force that not only has servants but is also a veterinarian. So they keep track, ongoing research, ongoing education.
Follow-up.
Mr. Chairman, my question is more about transmission to domestic animals. Is there, can either of you talk about that in terms of those animals who are eating those sick animals, the sick deer?
Ms. Blazer?
Representative and the committee, just in response to your scenario, the animals that we're talking about, the farm servants, if they die, are dying within the enclosure, you know, of the pen. We're not talking about them out and about. So, anyway, there is some, right now, I have not seen publications related to transmission potentially to dogs. There may be some ability for cats to, they've demonstrated in a laboratory setting that they may find that the CWD prion in cats, as I understand it. Whether they serve to transmit it, I don't know. They are looking at other scavenger species, birds as well. So that, you know, that's some of the work that's been done.
We have two more questions for these testifiers. The next up is Representative Heinzelman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to either of the testifiers, there was a comment made earlier, a question directed towards the doctor, I believe, that suggested that if a animal was to die and then go and hide, which is, I know, typical animal behavior inside or outside of a fence, that birds and other animals could then be transporting prions other places. And I'm just curious, I didn't hear any pushback or rebuttal to that. Is that a known science? I mean, is that something that is happening? Because I'm wondering, you know, you got wolves that are moving literally, you know, 10, 20, 30, sometimes hundreds of miles, lots of other predators that can carry material that they've consumed. What's the background there? Because I'd really like to know if that's a fact.
Dr. Thompson?
Mr. Chair, representative, members of the committee, that is certainly an area of research right now. I am not aware of any, you know, other than in research settings, any definitive evidence of if those animals can certainly carry that. I think they're thinking they can, but I can't point to any definitive research on that. I guess I'd ask Dr. Glazer if she knows of any.
Dr. Glazer?
Representative and the committee, they're, my understanding is if they, carnivores would scavenge carcasses, potentially there may be a mechanical transmission. They have not documented that the, you know, that wolves would become ill from chronic wasting disease prions. But that being said, that's the limited amount of knowledge I have, is that there's a potential that they could scavenge and then carry it mechanically, meaning it would go through their guts and come out in, you know, in gut content.
Follow up, Representative.
So just to be clear then, and once again to either of the testifiers, is, to your knowledge, there is no known science to back up that sort of idea that somehow CWD is being transported by carnivores, predators, whatever the case. I'm just trying to be clear.
Dr. Glazer?
Representative and the committee, I would say that the research right now, I'm not familiar with the breadth of the research, so I would have to look into that question on how much is known about it.
We can certainly look into that if needed.
Thank you, Dr. Last question, Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one thing I wanted to point out so that we're, you know, we have this on the record and we all understand this is that the task force recommendation is regarding evaluating regulations related to deer feeding and the live cervid imports. So the task force is not something that would stop us from doing any of the other recommendations. The task force would just be on these two things. So if sometime in the near future someone other than me presented that as a solution in response to this audit that really is only addressing the last suggestion and really would only be regarding deer feeding and live imports. And so my question for you is about the strengthening of enforcement, because that's something we could do now without waiting for recommendations from somewhere else, because we have the recommendations right here. So I'm wondering from the board if you can speak to how do we help you do that now? Do you need resources? Do you need staff? Do I need Ms. De La Cueva to be in the background keeping an eye on you to keep everybody on task? What could we do to help you strengthen enforcement now?
Dr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, representative members, thank you for that question. Thinking broadly of what the board does with enforcement and the what we've taken up with the chronic wasting disease and the farm cervid program, at this point we believe that we have the field staff necessary, that it's a matter of retraining. I think there are various points within the report that mentions some of the work that we're doing right now. I would like to hand that to you in a day or two and say that it's been done and we're doing everything that we need to do, but it is going to take time. So then I would look to the committee and recommendations that you may have on further things that the board could be doing. But we are implementing, retraining our staff, looking through the regulations that we do have, talking about what we need to increase that penalty amount to, and other options.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just encourage the board and everybody listening here to follow through on that. You know, we shouldn't have to ask for an audit in order to for the board and staff to be doing their jobs. And if we need there to be better training, then let's do it quickly, because this really is a crisis. It's continuing to spread. And the board, the way things are right now is that the board has the authority to enforce these things. The board, that's who has the authority to do this. And so if the board isn't doing it, we can't just continue to ask for audits to show that things aren't happening. You know, the DNR and deer hunters and the public is left with not a lot of recourse, and I just really would encourage you to take this seriously and move quickly and follow through on this, because it's incredibly important. This isn't just a, you know, political game. We need to stop this and do what we can sooner rather than later. So thank you.
I'm sure the board is doing this. Any further comments by members of the committee? If not, thank you very much for your testimony. Next up, we have DNR Commissioner Mr. Tom Landwehr. And then on deck, Craig Engwall, Gary Olson, and Brenda Harkoff will be on deck. Good morning, Commissioner. Identify yourself.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. My name is Tom Landwehr. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. Yeah, I appreciate your time, and I understand, Mr. Chairman, you are under time constraints here, so I'll try to make this as brief as possible. Mr. Chairman, members, first off, I'd like to express appreciation to the legislative auditor for taking this on and doing a very thorough job that identified some serious concerns, and we certainly share some of those concerns. Mr. Chair, members, the back page of the report is a letter that we prepared in response to the findings, and that will provide more substance to the comments that I will be making here today. Mr. Chair, members, I think, as many of you know, many of you are deer hunters, it's really impossible to overstate the significance of the wild deer herd to the state of Minnesota. It is the most sought-after game species in the state. We sell some 500,000 licenses per year. We harvest on average 200,000 deer per year. It is the recreational pursuit that provides memories and relationships and experiences that are valued by very, very many people in the state. It is a foundation of a $500 million hunting economy that goes for everything from buying rifles and ammunition to buying licenses to spending time at local hotels and resorts and all of the things that go along with it. It's an extraordinarily important resource in the state of Minnesota. It is because of the significance that the department, of course, is very concerned about it, and stewardship of deer is, of course, the responsibility for the Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Chair, members, we have the luxury of being able to see what can happen when this CWD goes bad, and Wisconsin is a good example of that, especially in the eastern part of the state. Deer herds are declining in number because of the effect of CWD. Hunters are taking up less participation in those parts of the state because nobody wants to hunt sick deer and have to worry about whether or not they should eat it. The question has come up with respect to other wild animals. There's recent evidence that there's the possibility of some of these types of diseases passing on to primates, and so there's a new heightened concern that what this might mean ultimately for humans. Nothing at this point to really make people overly alarmed. It's just something we want to be aware of, and all the more reason to make sure that this disease does not spread in the state of Minnesota. Mr. Chair, members, we do have a strong concern about the oversight of deer and elk farms in Minnesota, given the potential to expose chronic wasting disease to the wild herd. Our concerns are heightened by the discovery of CWD in eight different operations since 2002, including three concurrent infections in operations across the state of Minnesota. Our concerns really center on the potential for diseased farmed deer being brought into the state, effectively importing CWD in the state, escaped farmed deer transporting or spreading the diseases within the borders, and that relationship between the role of the board and the role of the Department of Natural Resources in terms of dealing with these with this disease. Mr. Chair, members, I won't go through the whole report. A few observations on some of the specifics in the report. We absolutely agree with the OLA recommendation that the BAH must enforce the farm deer rules. To Representative Becker Finn's point, the best laws and policies on paper don't do a world of good if you don't enforce those policies and those rules. We believe that fundamental to the effort is inspection of the adequate inspection of the facilities, monitoring of the deer herd inventories, the deer and elk herd inventories, and enforcement of regulations such as the fencing requirements, the CWD testing requirements, and the requirements to report escapes. Mr. Chair, members, I'd also point out, and I don't know that this comes across very loudly in the report, that when an inspection is done, it's typically sort of a desk inspection, sort of an interview inspection, and there's a checklist that the inspector uses. And so much of the information that's collected is actually self-reporting. If you look at some of the old documents, you'll see an inventory of about 20 animals, about 10 animals. And you've heard some of the challenges with respect to how you actually do an inventory. The report identifies the sort of range of operations here. Some of these are one deer, two deer that mom and pop rescued, you know, from the combine 10 years ago, and they keep it, and they're required to have a permit for that. Many of these are very highly professional operations with 100 or 200 animals on them that are very closely monitored and very valuable animals, and everything in between. And they range from wide open operations where you can see every animal to a lot of operations where they're in the woods. Some of these operations are for people to come and actually emulate a hunt, pretend they're hunting, if you will, and go out and shoot a deer in a pen. And so they retain some of the forest activity. So absolutely correct what Dr. Thompson said is it's very challenging to observe some of these animals when they're in the sort of semi-wild environment. So when we talk about inspection, we're talking about querying the operator and saying, how many deer do you have? About 20. You know, is the fence maintained? Yes. And it doesn't require, in all cases, a physical inspection. And that, I think, is another weak link in the information here. As many of you are aware, we had an operation in Winona where our officers went and inspected it. We found that the fence was extremely deficient in a number of places. The requirement is 96 inches. In many cases, this was less than 4 feet. Deer have no problem at all jumping over a six-foot fence. And subsequently, seven deer in that operation were determined at CWD. Movement of those deer out of the fence, movement of wild deer into the fence, you know, very, very serious problems. And that operation had been inspected the year before, and the fence was checked as being adequate, and the deer numbers were checked as being adequate. So I think we have to understand that the role of the inspectors to date has not been to physically inspect these operations, not physically do an inventory, and that is another weak spot, I think, in the system here. So we therefore agree that BAH should use the tools that monitor the inspection process, make sure the inspections are being done the way they should be, and that when operators are failing, that those inspectors maintain an eye on that operation, make sure they're coming into compliance. We agree with the finding that the board and the department should have a memorandum of understanding, and as the legislative auditor noted, we have signed that letter of understanding for data privacy. The concern is that the operators' names not become public, and we certainly deal with private data all the time with licensing and boat registration and so on. So we know how to do that. We can do that. We've got the agreement in place that clarifies when those data are considered private. We believe that we should address some other issues with respect to coordination. You know, what happens when there's a CWD suspect and we need to start an investigation. We also need to have a better role in terms of developing response plans with CWD positive herds. Finally, we agree that the rules for deer feeding live cervid import need review. I think that was the part of this recommendation for a task force. We agree that the legislature should look at some of those regulations, especially with respect to deer feeding. We do have the authority, as was identified, to implement feeding bans in areas where there are documented cases of CWD. We do not have that authority to just do statewide. Obviously, deer feeding it can range from a bird feeder to a trough to piles of corn in a field, and it's very popular for some people to do that, just to observe deer, and so it's a very controversial proposal to talk about reducing people's ability to feed deer, but absolutely as a potential vector for transmitting chronic wasting disease, and we think it merits review. Our Deer Plan Management Advisory Committee, which you know is wrapping up its work now with respect to the state's first deer plan, actually recommended that the state have a statewide ban on deer feeding. So it is something that people who are close to the deer management concur that is a serious concern and a serious issue. Mr. Chair, members, in closing, we agree with the OLA that the BAH program has improved in recent months. I think that's a testament to Dr. Glazier. We appreciate the steps that they have taken. We're hopeful that will continue. Always concerned when there's the prerogative of one individual to make a program successful or not. We hope that the board itself will take on the goal of sustaining a thorough program. It is our goal to work with BAH to ensure that the chance of CWD spreading to the wild deer from farm deer is minimized. And, Mr. Chair, members, we are hopeful that things will improve in the future, and I stand for any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. We do have questions. First up, Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll go quick. Commissioner Landwehr, how much has the department spent of hunter license fees on responding to chronic wasting disease in the last, just say, since January of 2017?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not absolutely certain of that. I believe it's $870,000, $1.1 million. Mr. Chair, members, that brings up a point as well. Much of the CWD response has been from deer hunter dollars. We don't have a sort of a disease fund outside of some of those deer hunter dollars, and the costs going forward are going to be enormous because we continue to have to monitor the wild herd. In CWD-infected areas, we will require hunters to bring every deer to a station where we'll collect some of those glands to test them for CWD. So it becomes very, very expensive to monitor. Now we've got several locations where we need to do that.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a follow-up, carcass transport. So we know that there are Minnesota residents who go hunting all around the country and bring deer back. Do we have any reciprocal agreements
or do you have the authority to make reciprocal agreements where the carcasses could be tested from, let's just use Wisconsin, for example. Let's say they have a chronic waste and disease county that where their wild deer infected. A Minnesota resident goes and shoots a deer there and wants to bring it home. Can you work in an agreement to have that deer tested before it crosses the border?
Mr. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members, up until very recently, we prohibited the import of cervids from any area that had known CWD. So if it was eastern Wisconsin, if it was Wyoming, some of those places where we got CWD, we prohibited just from those areas. But in the last couple of years, we have gone and we have now prohibited import of any deer from any or any cervid from any place without removing the brain, the head, and the spinal cord, unless you are going to bring it directly across the state from Wisconsin, say, to North Dakota or whatever. And so it is, right now we do have an import ban on deer and elk into the state of Minnesota.
Two more questions here. Next up, Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Landwehr, I just was looking at the numbers from the bar graph we had earlier showing the number of cervids that were tested, where we have, you know, somewhere between 12% and 16% of non-compliance.
Yes.
What percentage of the deer in the wild are tested for CWD?
Mr. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members, it has been, I couldn't tell you what the exact percentage has been, but our monitoring program has been focused around areas where we have had a CWD positive. So the year I started was 2011. We actually found a deer, wild harvested deer down in southeast Minnesota that had CWD. We'd actually been monitoring that area because of a previous elk farm infestation. We've been doing a monitoring program there, so we monitor a pretty significant subset of all of the deer harvested in that area in order to detect if it should come back up. In 2011, we found that. And so immediately when we have a confirmed positive, we implement an extremely intensive monitoring program. And so in southeast Minnesota, Fillmore County, where we've been doing it the last few years, every deer that was harvested in that permit area had to be tested for CWD so that we could get a really solid handle on it. But across all 200,000 deer that are taken in the state, we really have focused those limited resources on those areas where we know that there are CWD.
And thank you, but when you said that you had to test every deer that was harvested, was it 100% compliance or was it like 85% compliance?
Mr. Chair, members, we don't know how many people snuck a deer out, if you will, if they didn't bring it in. It's very challenging, as you might guess. Somebody's got a deer in the back of a trunk or the back of a SUV to
sure.
Know what rate. But I do believe it was a pretty significant percentage, in part because I think people want to know if they've got an infected deer as well.
How much more susceptible are farm deer to CWD versus wild deer?
Mr. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members, I don't think the susceptibility is any different at all. I think wild and domestic deer have the same susceptibility to the disease.
I guess, in my opinion, I mean, 80% or 65% compliance for testing is really good given all the other factors we've identified on how it's difficult to test every single deer that dies. And certainly in the wild, where you find you have an area where you want to test every single deer, you know that you're not testing every one, but we're doing a significant amount of testing. It seems like it's to get to 100% compliance, even when farm deer is almost impossible. So I just wanted to clarify some information. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Landwehr, I believe it was earlier this week, even before that, you'd mentioned the issues with the problem that in Wisconsin. I believe also down in Iowa they have a big problem. And it's really, a lot of it's right close to the Minnesota borders. Earlier this week, Governor Walker made a statement that he wants to start clamping down and doing what they can to work on the CWD issue in Wisconsin. I'm just wondering if this would be a good opportunity for, because the relative closeness out in the areas where we have problems and they have problems, getting together with multi-states dealing with this issue and leveraging some federal dollars to help.
Mr. Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, I think coordination is absolutely essential. I know that our staff at the staff level, they do talk to their counterparts in the adjacent states. You know, regrettably, Wisconsin is way too little, way too late. You know, it is out of control in East Wisconsin, and they will never be able to get it under control.
Last question with this segment, Chair Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Landwehr, thank you for being here. I've been somewhat critical of you and your agency with regards to what's going on with CWD, and we've exchanged those thoughts. I continue to be frustrated by the amount of finger-pointing that had been going on between the Board of Animal Health and the DNR. You know that Southeast Minnesota is a hotspot for CWD, at least that's the portrayal that we get. And last year, we found out that the DNR was disposing of carcasses in the Rochester area along a path on a WMA. Just totally unacceptable. I believe that in statute in 35.155, subdivision 7, that the Commissioner of Natural Resources may inspect farm survey facilities, and farm survey records with reasonable suspicion that laws protecting native wild animals have been violated. Commissioner, the finger-pointing and the blaming needs to stop, okay? And you and the Board of Animal Health need to roll up your sleeves and get to work on this. We take this very seriously in the legislature. I do, and we've had a number of conversations about it. And I just want you to know that I believe that you have the authority to do some of these things. I think that you've been negligent in your agency to do some of these things that I believe that you have the statutory authority to do. And I just hope that we can move on and try to solve this issue. It's a very complicated one, and I appreciate everybody's being here and being willing to address this. But we all need to work together to find the solutions. Thank you.
Mr. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members, I absolutely agree, and I would point out a couple things. One is that we only enforce when we have reasonable suspicion, and that is not necessarily very easy to obtain, and it's a pretty high bar. So we, in fact, the Winona case was one where we did have reasonable suspicion, and we took action on that. The point of the meeting here today is to go over the findings of the BAH recommendation. DNR is not pointing fingers here, Mr. Chair, members. This is a report from the OLA, and it does a very good job of identifying that there were some weaknesses. And Mr. Chair, members, that is my point here today, is to say that we find that to be completely true, and we think that that's a problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just real quickly, the reasonable suspicion when we had the meeting earlier this spring or winter, whatever the time of season is, we asked staff, what does the definition of reasonable suspicion? And basically was told by them, nonpartisan staff, that if you think something's going on, you have the authority to do it. So we'll carry on the conversation. But thank you for being here, and I know you're sincere in wanting to do this, so thank you.
Okay, again, we have three more people to testify. One last quick question, Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just real quickly, the susceptibility is the same for wild and farmed deer. The issue is that farmed deer are close together, and they spread the disease by having contact with each other and eating from the same places and drinking from the same places and physically being in the same space. So the idea that it's going to spread really quickly within the wild herd without the farm deer issue, yes, the susceptibility is the same, but the risks are higher when they're in the same space. And then just real quickly regarding the comment on the dumping of carcasses, is all the information about carcass dumping and that kind of thing, is that public data?
Madam Chair, members, this particular case Representative Fabian was mentioning was animals that had actually been tested and found negative for CWD, and so we dumped the carcasses on a wildlife management area. This is a challenge that anybody who deals with dead deer, road authorities in particular, has to deal with. We have to have a place to put the animals, and so in our case, state forest, wildlife management areas, places where people typically wouldn't be walking, is convenient places. That is not an acceptable way to dispose of CWD-positive deer, and those deer can only go into specifically lined facilities, and that's what happens to those deer.
Thanks, Mr. Commissioner.
Thank you.
And we have three folks left on the agenda, Craig Engwall, Gary Olson, Brenda Hartcroft, and Jim Byrd. And please hold your testimony to 3 or 4 minutes if possible. We need to be out of here by 5 to 10. Good morning, Mr. Engwall. Identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair members. My name is Craig Engwall. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, and I will limit myself to 2 so I can share my time with John Zandler here on behalf of the Bluffland Whitetails Association. I agree with a lot of what has been said here, what Commissioner Landwehr has described, the deer herd. We have 500,000 deer hunters in Minnesota. It's a valuable tradition, and we must protect both our wild deer herd and that tradition. It's an economic lifeblood of Minnesota. There's over $500 million in economic revenue generated. And where I live in northern Itasca County, in towns like Effie, Big Fork, Northome, it's a really big deal. And so if that tradition in the wild herd is threatened, it's going to have significant consequences. As I said, we agree with many of the recommendations of the OLA, and we think that we can go beyond that, too. One of our concerns is that deer hunters pay 50 cents out of every license for Servant Health, and that account has been tapped. And when that's gone, other deer dollars can be spent, taken away from habitat management, other important things. So we think we should look at the equities of how that's paid for, what Servant farmers can do to share in that cost. And with that, I'll give John some time to speak.
Thank you, Greg.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. My name is John Zandler. I have a live in West St. Paul. I also have a farm down on the Minnesota-Iowa border, but it's on the smart side. Between 2016 and 2017, deer hunting licenses in southeast Minnesota went down 6%. That translates into real dollars. That's dollars that's going into local merchants. That's dollars that is going into taxidermy, meat processing, hotels. You know it. This is an economic issue as much as it is a sporting issue. But my point specifically to the Legislative Auditor's Report is the expansion of the board and the board's oversight. Members of the committee, if the Department of Education let 30% of the teachers slide on their continuing education requirements, we'd be screaming for action today. If the post board ignored 30% of the police officers doing their annual certification, we'd be screaming for some changes. We need to expand this board to operate in the consumer's best interest, in the state's best interest. There is technical expertise that the members of the board can provide, and I think that's wonderful. However, the board operates in all of our best interests. Deer hunting is part of our culture. We've inscribed that in our state constitution. I look forward to what the legislature can do with this report and find common sense solutions to stemming the expansion of the chronic wasting disease. We stand shoulder to shoulder with MDHA, QDMA, and other organizations interested in making a solid and progressive change on this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Seeing no comments, we'll next move to Gary Olson. Thanks for your testimony. And then Ms. Hartkoff and Mr. Byrne are on deck. Good morning, sir. Identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Gary Olson. I'm Vice President of Minnesota Deer Farmers Association, and I also serve on represent Minnesota deer farmers at the United States Animal Health Association, where I serve on the USHA Committee of Wildlife Diseases and also the Captive Wildlife, which we meet annually with all the state veterinarians and animal health professionals all around the United States. I'm going to have to go through a little faster here because we're kind of limited on time. But just going back to the board here, you know, they talk about the expansion of the board, but I think people need to understand that we've had a certified advisory board for the last 20 years that really monitors the program, and that's been between 15 and 20 members. And that's been well represented by Minnesota Zoo, Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, and Public Health, and everybody else. So it's not that 5-member panel that actually oversees the certified. We have a board under the board
that we've been monitoring. Just yesterday, we had our first task force meeting that we set up, and there was, I think there's 15 on that task force that discusses issues with CWD and deer farming. But, you know, what happens when a deer farm does get the CWD in Minnesota? We're locked down. We're quarantined under federal quarantine, and no animal leaves alive, period, none. Trace-out programs begin to see where and if where these animals came from and where they've gone in the last 5 years. So they're well-traced, well-documented, and these go through extensive epidemiological studies. So when a deer farm does get it, which happens rarely, we only have one in Minnesota right now, and they're well-documented and traced. But I'll just jump over here. I'm going to have to skip through this a little fast.
You have time. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. But I'm just going to explain a little bit what happens when a deer farm gets it. Like I said, we're locked down, but when a government-operated high-fence facility gets it, I don't know if anybody has ever heard of Wind Cave National Park in South Dakota. Well, Wind Cave has about 11,000-acre high-fence facility over there. And they talk about CWD being devastating to the animals. This park was designed to carry 275 animals, and their herd numbers got to 950. Well, they found that they had between a 30 and 40% prevalence rate of CWD, so that's about a third of the animals carried CWD. So what they did over there to lower the numbers is they dropped the fences, opened the gates, and released them. You know, if anything like this had happened to a deer farm, we'd be in jail. But under a federal or a state program, they released them. And this was all done under the objection of the South Dakota state vet, Dr. Overcoven, which I know very well. I asked him how he allowed this to happen, and he said the feds rolled right over me and said this, we had no authority over this. So, I mean, we can point fingers or whatever, but this is the kind of double standards that our industry faces all the time, which is very frustrating to us. We work under one set of rules, and it seems like everybody else works on another. Talking about a little bit about the audit, you know, they keep throwing this number of a third of the people aren't complying, but you know, in the paragraph above it, it says we've had an 85 to 95% compliance rate in testing from 2014 to 17, which is actually pretty good when you're talking, you know, livestock numbers. And, you know, you've got to understand, this isn't yearly tests. This has been going on for over 15 years. So we've got, you know, so we have tests on tests on tests yearly. So at that level, we have a pretty high level of confidence that our animals are healthy. And this passes the year 15 years. On the life cycle of an animal, we're talking generational. I mean, we're talking 3, 4. And I know in my herd, I've got animals that have been tested for 5 generations, which really gives me a high level of confidence where I'm at. When you look at the two farms in Minnesota that have come up, we have been the two farms that are really the problem right now in Minnesota, the Crow Wing Farm and the Winona County Farm, and neither case has a source or a trace back of moving positive animals into their facility. The Crow Wing Farm was built on an old, undocumented DNR public carcass dump site. This farm had a record of testing over 182 animals prior to this and 73 since the test has been found. The incidents, the CWD case on this farm, occurred in the pen where the carcass dump site was found. And he built this in 2014, unbeknownst to him that this site was there. This is not a farm problem. This was a carcass movement and dump problem. This was not under the wheelhouse of the Board of Animal Health. There's actually grant money appropriated to study the carcass dump site on the Crow Wing Farm and neighboring properties. Dr. Tracy Nichols from USDA took bone samples that she found, soil samples, and other vegetation for testing. The Winona County Farm was the most recent case, and that's right down by me. It's about 25 miles from my farm. The herd was a taxidermy issue. The owner admitted throwing taxidermy carcass waste in and near his deer pens to feed outdoor cats. These cats also used his feed bunks as litter boxes. The farm had no contact or movements from other herds for over 10 years. So this was clearly not a farm issue either. This was a taxidermy problem.
Could you wind up in about 30 seconds, sir?
Okay.
Thank you.
One issue that that was brought up here was the movement of animals. We understand we only brought 23 animals into Minnesota last year. So these are from highly tested herds from around the country for breeding purposes, but we export about 950 animals. So if there's any issue about closing borders, we really need to address that because a lot of states have
reciprocal agreements where if we don't import theirs, they won't import ours. So that would be a huge commerce issue for us. I know Oklahoma is one state that will lock the borders to Minnesota if we lock the borders to them.
We have a couple more testifiers, so please wrap it up.
Okay. I guess just the biggest issues we have right now, what we're seeing go on is carcass movements that we do not deal with. Road kills is something we really need to address. Carcass dump sites. And another one is taxidermy issues. So I guess I'll take any questions if you do have any.
Thank you. Seeing no, one quick question, Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just heard about why it's a whole bunch of other people's problem. You know, in your estimation, is there anything else that the deer farmers need to be doing to address this issue?
Well, Representatives, we actually asked for a CWD certification program 15 years ago, which the industry asked for and was put out. USDA helped to monitor and administer this through the Board of Health in most states. And we follow this pretty severely. I mean, we in my case, I know we can't import animals. Anything that I'd ever bring in for breeding stock or anything has to be of a similar quality or status to my herd, or I lose status. And status is something that's pretty well. We protect pretty hard in our herds. We don't want to lose. So for herds and our exports, does that ask your question?
Thank you, sir. We really need to move on, but very quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, that didn't answer the question. We clearly know what needs to happen, and it's not happening. And we've got to have everybody taking responsibility here. So thank you.
Thanks for your testimony, sir. We really have to move on. Brenda Hartkoff and Jim Byrne, we've got about 3 minutes left. And thank you for your patience, and save the best for last. Go ahead, Jim.
Mr. Chairman, representatives, my name is Jim Byrne. I'm the president of the Minnesota Elk Breeders Association. And again, just like everybody else, we're very thankful for this audit, for their thorough review of the Board of Animal Health's oversight of the farm survey. It's good for all parties to evaluate what has been successful in the past and what could be improved within the existing framework of status and rules. And we look forward to helping implement the recommendation. That being said, this audit was heavily weighted towards farm survey regulations, which is only a portion of the accountability factor for keeping CWD out of Minnesota. We as an industry have added concerns with potential transport of CWD into Minnesota, which the scope of this report only touched on. CWD is a complex disease, and so are the ways it can be transferred. One only needs to have a conversation with the USDA personnel who can conduct the epidemiology of each farm cervid case to begin to understand all the possible risks. One particular concern for the farm cervid industry is the fact that both of the last two index herd owners appear to be taxidermists. And even though the DNR regulates taxidermists, there is no monitoring of the waste stream coming from these facilities and the taxidermists. Experts will agree that waste materials from taxidermists can possess the ability to transfer CWD infectious animals. While taxidermists are monitored, the waste stream is not. Illegal carcasses, which Gary just mentioned, are transported from other states into the Minnesota, which was not intended to be a focus of the study and was only briefly mentioned, but is of much concern. Last year alone, over 150 warnings or tickets were issued by the DNR for illegal transport of hunter-killed carcasses into Minnesota. And these are the only the ones that were caught. And as Commissioner Landwehr pointed out, there is a large number that are coming in that are undetected. How many more came undetected? We don't know. And where the potentially undetected, where did these unprotected carcasses end up? We don't know that either. While the laws are in place against bringing a whole carcass in, the law does not appear to be well known or adhered to by the hunters. We are concerned to see from the audit that about one-third of the farm survey producers who reported dead deer or failed to submit tissues of at least one of those animals for CW testing. The media was quick to misstate the fact that by removing the phrase at least one, you change the whole perspective of that article. And that Gary also mentioned that there were, in the report, it was stated that we estimate that overall statewide compliance rate for CWD testing is between 85 and 95% for the years 2014 to 17. These numbers are remarkably higher than the press would report and much closer to reaching the 100% of animals being tested, which is our goal. But let's put these numbers into further perspective. The report states that in 2016 alone, 1,376 farmed servants were tested for CWD, with a report indicating that it was 13% of all farmed deer and elk registered in Minnesota that year. This would mean that there were an estimated 10,000 farmed servants in inventory in 16. In the world of surveillance statistics, this is a high level of assurance and has been approved for official testing purposes. Farm servant industry has tested thousands of animals since 2004 and thousands of negative results. Additionally, the report states that there are elk and deer farms in 75 of 87 counties in Minnesota, thereby creating testing throughout many areas of the state, which are neglected in just testing around the management areas. We were surprised to see that the audit determined an advisory task force should be convened to evaluate the state's regulations relating to live animal imports. The audit reports that in 17, the number of live animal imports were just 23, whereas the number of cervid carcasses coming into to Minnesota from other states is a far greater number, as evidenced by the number of warnings or tickets issued in 17 alone. To our knowledge, no epidemiological report has come back from USDA linking specific farmed imports to CWD on any Minnesota farms.
Mr. Byrne, if Ms. Harkoff's going to get the last word in, we got to go to her right now.
I'll finish up. Industry stands ready to participate on the recommended Farm Survey Task Force in any capacity requested. We additionally feel further study of CWD is of utmost importance and would offer our assistance in obtaining funding, federal grants, and our animals for such studies. Our very livelihoods and in many cases retirement rests on owning healthy animals. The last thing we want on our farms or in the wild are sick animals. To that end, we look forward to being a part of a larger stakeholder group to ensure the future for Minnesota farmed and wild cervid herds.
Thank you, Ms. Hartkopf. And with that, thank everybody for being here. Closing comments, Mr. Chair?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. To the people in the industry, we've seen the reports of some fences and so forth that haven't been done. I strongly, strongly encourage you to do more outreach to your members and your industry to make sure that they are doing the responsible things and making sure that fences and gates and testing and reporting and all that stuff is being done. I cannot emphasize that to you enough as strongly as I want to, but please, please do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
With that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you all for attending.